Welcome, race fans, to another episode of the Weekly Overtake Podcast. We're coming to you right after the Formula One Grand Prix of France from the Circuit Paul Ricard. And this is, going to be kind of an interesting episode because I'm sure anybody who watched it, there's not really much to say. But I'm going to let my co-host Josh give his thoughts on what he saw and what he thinks. So, Josh, welcome.
Thanks, Taylor. Glad to be here again. It was not really, I guess, the most exciting of races. Lots of promising, opportunities coming in. Red Bull saying that their Honda power unit was going to have a significant upgrade. That didn't translate very well into this circuit, at least. Pierre Gasly, the number two at Red Bull, looking extremely like a number two. He's back in the midfield fighting the fight with the Renaults and the McLarens, while Max is fighting the good fight at the front against Ferrari. And I don't think he's going to make way into the Mercedes, but at least fighting for podiums. Yeah, Honda and Red Bull promising some good things. And they finished, in the same areas that we saw in the past. McLaren was another story. They really revamped the team in the offseason, and we haven't seen much. I mean, we have. They've been doing very well. We're used to the past couple seasons where Renault is the best of the rest, firmly planted in that fourth place seat. But McLaren is actually really challenging them and succeeding at, beating them at their own game and making their way up the podium. Like, this is the 850th race for McLaren, so McLaren no slouch in Formula One, but in this turbo hybrid era, it's really been Mercedes' game, ever since the rule changes. So, I mean, we hope the best for them. They have two new drivers this year. Of course, this is the eighth race of the season, but Fernando Alonso has since moved on to bigger and better things, with the 24 Hours of Le Mans and running in the World Endurance Championship and, some IndyCar hopes. Didn't qualify this year. Stoffel Vandoorne, he's gone. He's racing now in Formula E. And they've brought in Carlos Sainz, who formerly of the Force India team, now Racing Point, and Lando Norris, who came up from F2 last year as a promising young rookie. So the fact that McLaren showed very good pace this weekend, and really they've been winning the best of the rest races all season, I think that's kind of where the story is in Formula One right now, because Mercedes just looks like they're pretty much untouchable out in front, and no one has really showed pace enough to keep up with them. Charles Leclerc, despite his best efforts at Ferrari, is still a few tenths off, and that team isn't quite there. But also, Mattia Binotto replacing, the team principal from last year, they're also under quite of a rebuild themselves. So I think the story going into this weekend, even with this race, the result was to be expected. The circuit, not that exciting. I think Ferrari is in a rebuild, losing Raikkonen, keeping Vettel, adding Leclerc and Mattia Binotto. They're really trying to find their own stride. Obviously, their chassis is not up to snuff, but it's kind of the same story. It's a story that rebuilds right now for me. So McLaren rebuilding, finding their way up the pack, and Ferrari rebuilding and not being able to contend with Mercedes. So, what you got, Taylor?
Yeah, I think you bring up the point of, okay, why is Mercedes untouchable? I think this is an era of cars that it's all about engineering prowess, right? These cars are so fickle. They're always on a knife edge of temperature and strategy as far as any little mistake as far as treating the car a certain way can cause, massive implications. And so I think a team like Mercedes has that figured out really well, right? They've, I don't know, I'm not gonna stereotype German, the whole German thing, but I mean, maybe they have got this type of car situation figured out really well. While that's also a function of funding, not that Ferrari doesn't also spend a ton of money, but there's probably a certain level of engineering prowess, I guess, is the best way to put it. Because I don't want to say that like Ferrari isn't disciplined enough or they're not smart enough to figure stuff out. I mean, I think that's true, but I think you can almost goes back to how it's put into like there's normal street cars. I think generally Mercedes or just kind of German cars in particular have this kind of robust, German cars have these, has this robust pedigree, you know, versus I would say an Italian, while they can make all the horsepower and they can handle really well and all this stuff, I just don't think that they have that part figured out quite as well. And so if I'm giving advice to F1, if it's up to me, you know, how to fix this series so that the fans are happy, right? Because that's, again, this is all entertainment. At the end of the day, it's a marketing exercise and it's entertainment. And so, but if you don't keep people happy, then they're not going to watch it and you're not going to market very well. So how do you fix it? I think you make the cars generally more robust, right? So maybe bring down the tech a little bit. I know like in the aerodynamics, they've been trying to do that. Obviously we are in an era of fuel consumption. You have to be cognizant of that. I mean, again, you're going to keep the manufacturers happy. Why would you do this if you're not working towards what generally vehicles are going to anyways, which is better fuel consumption? So, okay, turbo era, I get it. Hybrid era, I get it. But let's find ways to scale this back a little bit so that the cars aren't so fragile. Josh?
So, yeah, I mean, we're talking fuel consumption, great. I think what you're trying to say is that we're progressing forward, right? So F1's trying to be on the edge of development, right? And that's been in the highlights, you know, or in the headlines, sorry, recently, as far as like efficiency and power and how we can deliver that and still have a good experience. But I think not so much as like efficiency is concerned, but, you know, moving into this turbo hybrid era, the argument from the Formula One fan will be, okay, you know, we ditched the 10s down to the 8s, down to the V6 hybrid, and now we're here. And now we want a spec series. Because what most people are asking for is, you know, a spec front wing, a spec rear wing, a spec power unit, you know, MGUKs, all this stuff coming across because of Mercedes and the way they've just basically just outperformed everybody throughout the past 6+ seasons, you know? And I think a lot of the argument against that will be, well, we have spec racing. If you want to go watch a spec series, go watch, you know, any GT series. Go watch IndyCar. IndyCar spec racing. NASCAR spec racing. Like, there is spec racing all across the board. There's not really any series which allows manufacturers to develop as much as they possibly can and just, you know, put that performance forward and put it out on the track and just see what it can do other than F1. It's almost like the last safe haven for engineering and technology to excel, you know, and a lot of the guys that watch that are Formula fans for years and years will say, do not turn this into a spec series because it will destroy Formula. Formula was supposed to be go out and build the best car you can. And if you want to watch something else, then, you know, change the channel and go watch the WEC, go watch GT Racing, go watch all the other series that have the balance of power, right? The BOP rules where they turn the car's ECUs down to make sure that the Aston can compete with the Porsche, that can compete with the Ford GT, right? So, yes, I'm with you that the racing has to be better. But I don't know if it comes with hampering the technological advancements that we can get from F1 and just the coolness of it being on the track. Like when they're sitting there pre-race, right, and they're in the, you know, on the grid, and you hear the fans like kicking on and the drivers in there, it almost feels like to an extent, like being a fan, it feels like we're about to watch like a space launch, you know, because like there's just so much going into it and cooling and like it is super cool. It is cool. And everything about it is cool until the race happens. And you're like, why is the Mercedes of Lewis Hamilton lapping everybody except Carlos Sainz in P6 at the end of the race? Like, why is this happening? Yeah, right. That needs to change, but I don't want to kill the cool factor of how awesome these cars actually are.
Yeah, and maybe you're right. Maybe I'm not really talking about going to spec engine or whatever, But one of the ways that MotoGP makes their field so competitive is that they have spec ECU, right? So everybody is on the same page with electronics. It basically, it goes down to like, okay, who can get really good at tuning that? A perfect example of where spec electronics or like not having spec electronics don't work is like what's been happening in World Superbike. I mean, bar this year because Ducati's Panigale before, but before that Kawasaki, they had the best electronics. They had proprietary ECU that kind of just blew everybody else away. And they obviously they spent way more money than everybody else doing it. And you saw Johnny Ray walk away with the championship 4 years in a row or whatever it was. And it's just like, yeah, okay. Who is that really benefiting? Like, okay, Kawasaki, sure. But you saw it affect the viewership, obviously, horribly. And so, okay, maybe if I'm F1, maybe do a spec ECU, maybe tone down the aerodynamics. And, you know, I don't know, with the tires, I think the tires are fine. I don't really see, I think the way that Pirelli is doing them now, I think is okay. Yeah, I think those two things would go a long way to tightening up the field and making it not to where money can win, basically can rule all, right? Because then you're just kind of pissing in the wind. I mean, what is it all for if everybody hates the series? Okay, great. Mercedes is walking away with it. Well, they also spent, you know, a ton of money too. I mean, I would just like to see, like when you can guarantee that everybody but three or four cars are even going to be in the same universe to win a race, and the rest of the field, you can pretty much just, it's just frustrating. To me, it just, it's like, yeah, I know that there's a lot of people who's like, oh, we'll just focus on the mid pack. And, you know, there's a lot of good battles happening there. And it's like, yeah, okay. I mean, that's fair. Yeah. There are people racing each other in the mid pack, but for what? For scraps, no. Yep. You know? And it just, to me, no point, man. I mean, I get it. And not, look, every series has, you know, the best and the rest, you know, the top and the bottom, and you're always going to have that, sure. But F1 has to tighten it up. Obviously, changes are coming, and we'll see how that plays out. But it is hard to imagine that it's, unless something drastic changes, that yeah, it's gonna do much. I don't know.
No, man, I hear you. I absolutely hear you. And I mean, you're talking about as far as the midfield and the battles that are there. I mean, there are some good battles, but like you said, it's not for the podium, and it's not anything substantial. There's no, you know, foundation behind that. There's no actual points that matter when it comes to the end of the season. When someone flips back to the pages of history, no one cares that Ricardo and, you know, Carlos Sainz or, you know, Lando Norris were fighting, you know, for laps on this race, for sure. And to talk about history, I think a little bit is Lewis Hamilton. Obviously, I think at this point, he's got to be arguably one of the top three F1 drivers of all time. Like, without a doubt, you can easily, you know, say he might be the best. But, like, how much of that comes from this Mercedes dominance? You know, like, he's just had a better machine throughout, you know, compared to anybody. So, it's tough. And it's in, I mean, Lewis has won 6 of 7 races this year. The only other win coming from Valtteri Bottas. And, of course, the Canadian Grand Prix where we saw Vettel cross the line first. 5-second penalty. I feel like there's been enough said about that. You know, people wouldn't shut up about that penalty that occurred. I think that got to Vettel a little bit. But, you know, for this season, for Lewis, he's drawn out a huge lead in the championship. And he will probably win this year again. But to me, that feels like not an asterisk, you know, because it wasn't like it's you just want to see somebody who wins when they fight, when they actually have real competition. And I think maybe what you're saying and what I'm feeling is that there's just not a lot of that battle happening on track. Like, it really, Lewis hasn't had to face a lot of adversity to be out front. You know, the fact that qualifying is everything to me is a huge issue. That shouldn't be everything. Like you said, like a MotoGP, Davia qualify, you know, like P8, and then by the first corner, he's right there with that hole shot device. Like, there's variables that make the Sunday that much more exciting. Whereas in F1, when I tuned in today, I wasn't hoping for a wreck or an issue, but I was hoping for a bad start or something, you know, that would just make you a little more interesting. And it was just status quo into the first, second, and third corners. Like, and once that happened, that I was just like, okay, nope. Now we're just going to sit here for the ride and see what happens. Maybe they're going to make some pits, you know, around, you know, between laps 17 and 24. We had multiple pit stops. Everyone came in, got the hard tires, and there was no overcut or undercut that could be done to achieve any grid placement, you know, against the field. So it was status quo from there on out. But yeah, I mean, with Lewis Hamilton, I don't want to take anything away from him. Obviously, he's doing a great job, and he's an excellent driver because Valtteri is sitting there with the same equipment, who's also an ice cold driver, and he can't produce what Lewis is producing. So
I think that he is probably still one of the greatest. I mean, regardless of whatever machine he's in, because I mean, he did it in the pre-turbo era as well. I caught this. I think it was Brazil 2008 in the rain. Yes. So there's a video on YouTube, the final eight laps of the 2008 Brazilian Grand Prix. And it is, I mean, it is like edge of your seat stuff, right? And I feel like I haven't seen that, at least in the last two, you know, I don't know. It's just been very few and far between. You know, and you brought up another thing about the track, which I totally agree on. It's like there has to be some sort of element of danger, you know. Not that I want to like put drivers or riders' lives at risk unnecessarily, but like, I mean, I really enjoy Azerbaijan, right? It's a street circuit. It's tight. You know, it's bumpy. There's a level of variability to that, which is just, it makes for exciting racing, you know. And circuit power card is like, it's perfect, right? It's huge runoffs, no gravel traps, walls are really far away, whatever. And it's like, you know, yeah, sure, makes it a great test track. But as far as racing goes, it's like, you know, you go off the track, you put four wheels off, doesn't matter. Just re-enter. As long as you don't get an advantage, just re-enter. You know, no big deal. Yeah, so I don't know if Paul Ricard is the right circuit for F1, especially in this era.
No, not today. I think with these cars, the way they're running, they need an outside influence or some other reason, like you said, a wall like we had in Canada, right, where Hamilton had to avoid running off the track, quote-unquote, or whatever, for Vettel's penalty. But even at this point, like, it all looks moot looking back. Like, looking forward, yeah, I think that's why I'm a little more excited about the midfield, because, you know, when you see someone fall, and I think Vettel's, I think he's really been, you know, something's in his head. He's not quite there. We can reach back. We haven't really talked a lot at all about free practice and qualifying or the race itself, because honestly, for you guys listening, like, if you watch the race, you know, you understand, you know, why we're here, why we're talking about other topics, because it's not necessarily important to talk about the race. But it is important to kind of explore, you know, the outer edges of what's going on in the field. But I think for Vettel, if you look at him in qualifying, yeah, he made it through to Q3. Of course, that's to be expected. You know, no gaff by Ferrari this time, like they had in Monaco. But his last lap, I think even the winds were in Mercedes' favor, because when you look at that lap that they had and the lap put in by Hamilton, Bottas couldn't match it. He had some issues in sector three. He was sliding around. There were a lot of different things going on there, but there was a crosswind that came towards the end on the second run of Q3 for a lot of the teams that didn't put in a good lap. So, just Vettel's not, he's not one with the car. Like, he's not in tune. I think he was shook from what happened in Canada, and he's not progressing forward, you know, qualifying in the back of the field. Leclerc qualifying third. Looking forward, I like Charles Leclerc. Vettel, lots of talks of retirement. He dismissed those. I don't think he's ready to be done, but I think he's not so much excited as maybe he used to be about getting in the car, getting behind the wheel, and going out to compete. And who can blame him? Because if I knew where I stood in the championship and how many points I am behind with how many races to go this year, if I'm Vettel, I'm like, bring on next season. You know, take this back to the garage, give the team a couple months time to get this shit together, and then put me back in the car next year with a clean slate and let's go. So I don't blame him for not being motivated, but it's just tough because Vettel's the only other guy right now in contention. So,
yeah, I agree. I think that he is probably just a little fed up with the environment, and he knows that as a driver, he still has that fire to compete, but he's just like, he's probably just thinking about if something doesn't change. Why waste your time? And, you know, because I think these guys, yeah, they want to be at the top. They want to be in F1. But I think even a guy like Fernando Alonso, like, you know, or Vettel, I feel like at this point, they really don't have anything to prove. Like, at least for me, like just as a normal fan, you know, I hear those guys' names and I don't have any asterisks next to them. I'm like, well, he didn't do this or that. Like, I mean, to me, they're one of the greats. Now, obviously, whatever, my opinion doesn't matter to those guys, but like, I think that at some point you're probably wondering, like, maybe I can scratch that itch a different way and compete in a different series and, you know, whatever. So, and I guess go back to like, what has to happen to really get the F1 director's attention? You know, when is it gonna be like viewership numbers? Is it gonna be tickets sold? Is it gonna be drivers like protesting and leaving? You know, what is it that's gonna be this thing that's like, yeah, okay, we gotta do something. We know that there's changes coming 2021. To me, that just feels like too far away. But
no, yeah, and it might be too far, because at this point in the season, we have the summer break coming. So, I mean, we got a 1 week break for the first time, I think, this year. So they're going to go from France straight to Austria at the Red Bull Ring, which should be a totally different track. And then after that, coming into Silverstone, which we all know who is going to win that race. I'll call it now. I'll bet, you know, not my 401k, but I'll bet a lot on the fact that Lewis Hamilton will somehow find a way to win Silverstone. And, you know, so, I mean, yeah, it looks pretty wide open from here. The rest of the season is kind of, it's moot for me now. If Ferrari can go on a tear, win 3-4 races, then we'll have a real conversation at hand. But Lewis Hamilton, like you said, you know, 5 championships, Vettel with 4. So looks like Lewis is on his way to his 6th, but no fault to Vettel. We've seen this in the past where F1 just kind of, they go on runs, right? Like teams do well and they go on a run. So I guess 2021 might be potentially the end to the Mercedes run, and we'll see what they can do after that. But I think most of the eyes are on 2021, and a lot of the fans are hoping. And if this series doesn't deliver during that season, which I'm willing to hold out for, right? We're almost halfway through the 19 season. We got one more year left after that, and then we're rolling in 21. So, like, obviously I'm here and I'm willing to roll out or hold out for those, you know, that season to happen. But if they don't deliver after that, I mean, I'm not sure like what's going to happen after that. And it's not the death of F1, but like you said, they're
it's going to be
deserves. We deserve something better, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. It's a dark, it's just a low point. And every series goes through that. MotoGP has gone through that. World Superbike's gone through it. I mean, NASCAR is in a low point right now. I mean, anywhere you look, there's been highs and lows. But hey, the point is to figure out what's wrong and move out of that. You know, another quick point I wanted to bring up about like Lewis Hamilton, and just make a comparison to what's going on in MotoGP right now. It's almost kind of the same situation. We have this guy, Marc Marquez, winning races over and over again, except I think the difference is that Marc Marquez is not really on superior machinery, right? Honda, I mean, if it wasn't for Marquez, Honda I'm not going to say they would be nowhere, but they would not be the top, right? Unlike Mercedes, right? Bottas is right there as well. So Marc Marquez, I think his dominance really comes from him just being a superior rider, which is interesting in one way, because I think we're witnessing like probably the greatest motorcycle rider that's ever lived as far as just raw talent versus, like I said, with Lewis Hamilton. I think there is no doubt he's an amazing driver. However, there is a huge advantage in the team, the machinery, and the whole program behind him. So that's just one difference I wanted to make.
Yeah, for sure. If you can kind of, I guess, readjust or recalibrate the balance between the machine and the driver, we'd like to see it. Of course, like I said before, when people talk about F1 being a spec series, that's terrible. We don't want that. People may want that and they think the grass is greener, but you don't. You don't want that. You want to see these teams develop and go head to head in both engineering and driver ability and capacity. Like, that would be the best of both worlds, literally. Who has the best machine and the best driver? But I feel like the balance right now is probably 70 machine, 30 driver, maybe 60, 40, however you want to split it up, right? Pick your poison. But the closer you can bring that to a 50-50 type balance, at least to get started, right? Like, don't go full spec. Full spec would be 0-100, right? That's a spec car. Everyone gets the same thing.
Yeah.
Go race it, you know? So we don't want to be there, but we want to be somewhere closer to, you know, driver and car, and not so much car and driver. Look at Lando Norris putting in great laps this week. Like, in qualifying, he was 1/10 off of Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. And the Red Bull's been a very competitive car all season long. And Lando was right there. And his teammate was right behind him, Carlos Sainz, with the McLaren. So there's no doubt McLaren's making big moves. They just invested a buttload of money into a new aerodynamic, you know, garage or whatever it is for, you know, for their development, for their cars. So McLaren's making the push. Like you said, Lewis has done it before back in 2008, and that was in a McLaren. So this team is not like Williams right now. Like, they're not willing to sit back and just wait and take time. They want to get back into the fight, and it's taken them 8 races to qualify, you know, 5th and 6th and lock out the third row. So they're coming. They're coming right now currently for Red Bull. They've already beat Renault. Like, Renault, best of the rest, that's gone. Their home GP, no thank you. Like, Hulkenberg had a horrible lap in qualifying. He put himself in the back. Ricardo had a really strong qualifying and a really strong race. Ricardo was fighting all weekend, and props to him. Like, he's getting every ounce of horsepower out of that Renault car. And Ricardo had a really great race weekend. So, but McLaren's coming, I think, and they're coming next year too. So, like I said before, they revamped that entire team. Ferrari, they're not there this season, but I think they will be there next year against Mercedes. Obviously, they made a huge error in the way they designed that chassis, because they just miscalculated the way the season works. And I don't know what it is. It's just, yeah, looking at the calendar, I mean, I've never really taken this perspective, but I guess if you put me in charge right now, I would have to start from, you know, looking way out all the way in. There's 21 races. You can't win them all, right, is the idea. So you had to pick, how can we best, you know, build our car to compete at, you know, the highest number of percentage races that we can do. So, you know, looking at Sector 3 in Barcelona, Ferrari's weak. They're great on the straights. We understand that. But they've always had troubles in the corners and the slow areas. They were never going to compete really at Monaco. They weren't going to compete here at the French GP. So, I mean, they got to do something to bring more downforce to that car in the corners and be able to carry that speed that Mercedes. I don't think they're that far off, but I don't think it's going to happen. Like, it's not going to happen this year.
Another thing, let's just take a moment to Verstappen, right? This is a kid who has got some serious fire. And when have we seen him let loose that, you know, this year? I just feel like this situation he's in, he hasn't got to really just do that driving. I feel like last year we saw it more. Maybe I don't know. I can't really speak to why that was, but I feel like this year I'm just realizing, like, God, he's been a solid fourth or whatever.
No, and very consistently. Yeah. And if, well, I mean, we can say this about a lot of people, but if it wasn't for Mercedes, right? Or if you just give Mercedes a half second penalty in qualifying or whatever, right? Bring that performance down a little bit and put them on par with the, because the Red Bull's been there with the Ferrari. And if you brought Mercedes back down to that group, yeah, we're looking at very different podiums this year. Last year, like, Max won the Mexico Grand Prix. Like, he, towards the end of the season last year, from Canada to Canada, from last season to now, he's been solid and, you know, almost untouchable in his own class. He has run a lot of boring races, you know, 7-10 seconds behind the guy in front. He's had a handful of podiums between now and then. I don't think he's fallen out. Like, he's still there. I think he understands the bigger picture. He knows he's the number one at Red Bull. And Red Bull, I don't see them falling back or going anywhere anytime soon. So, like, Vettel won most of his championships with Red Bull, right? So, I mean, Max is in a good spot. He's not. He definitely could be in a worse situation than he is right now. But yeah, he's consistently performing. That team is behind him. He is a great team principal. There's lots of continuity there that can carry them forward to the years to come. Pierre Gasly, I think, won't have a job by the end of this season.
Yeah.
Seriously, like, how – I don't understand how you can do that. Like, you're in the same car as Max, and you're just grossly underperforming. Like, terribly. Right. If Ricardo was there, at least they can give each other a toe in qualifying, you know, and, like, help propel them up the standings and put them in the fight and have another driver on that row with you. But Max is all alone, really, you know, and he's still holding his own.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm sure that they're not sitting back being like, what are we doing wrong? I think they know, like, hey, right now, the way this is all going, we're doing everything we can. Right. And whatever, fourth is great. But and when the tides shift and the environment changes a little bit, you know, we'll be there and you'll be ready. So, yeah, it just sucks because, you know, he's such an entertaining guy to watch. And it's like, oh, man, we haven't really got to see that. Yeah. So that kind of sucks. But
no, Max is always, yeah, like him. I always say Christian Horner too. I love hearing from them, each of them, because they always have so much to say, you know. But like you said, a fourth is, yeah, it's terrible. But Max, third place in Australia, fourth, third place in Barcelona, fourth today. So he's literally hanging right up there with the best of them, right, in a car that is not even as good, not even close as good. And today he had a good chance on the start of the race. He was right there on Valtteri. Like, there was I don't know. There's, you know, a couple, one incident this way or that way, or something could have changed the whole landscape of the race. But of course, like you said before, you sent me that snap on Reddit of the commenters talking about the race. And it's like, I feel like I just watched, you know, a whole hour of a movie, and then just, you miss the one scene, the one part that was like the good part, you know?
Yeah. Or it's just a podcast with cars driving in the background.
Yeah. Yep. Just hanging out.
So. Pretty much. That'll pretty much wrap it up for this episode. If you guys,
big weekend next weekend, though. Big weekend.
Yes. Doubleheader. So definitely tune in for that. We'll be, it'll be fun-filled, action-packed. Probably do a pre and a post, just depending on how it all goes. But as always, thank you for tuning in. If you have any comments, questions, send us an email at weeklyovertake@gmail.com. Or leave us a comment or whatever. We'll be sure to get back to you. So, Josh,
thanks for listening. Appreciate you guys.